Do we have to hit record?
Yes.
I think there is a have to hit it. Yeah, I don't think it does it automatically.
Yeah, in the menu there'll be a record.
And then we've got the recording record.
Yeah, I think that, here, that more button, yeah.
Yeah.
There we go.
Record.
Recording in progress.
All right, here we are. So,
you're the CEO of Microsoft.
All right, so welcome for Thursday, July 3rd, 2025, for East County Fire and Rescue's Commissioner Staff Workshop. We have Commissioners Addis and Taggart online and the other three of us in the room with Chief Black and Chief Brown. Talking about Washougal Fire Service numbers.
Yep.
First thing up.
Yep. Did you want to start with that then?
Let's start with that.
Okay. Yeah. So in front of you is the spreadsheet that was in the board packet from Tuesday night. And Commissioner Taggart, I emailed it to you, so hopefully you had a chance to open it.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you take a look here, what we did was we have a minimum staffing option with an ILA with us and with Washougal standing up their own fire department. And then we have a preferred staffing model with an ILA with us and Washougal standing up their own fire department. So two different modes of operation, and then comparing the cost between ILA with us and Washougal standing up their own fire department. The one thing that I want to kind of put on record here is this is not my recommendation for what we would do for services, but knowing what they have currently in the budget for their fire service with the contract with the ILA between Camas and Washougal, this would fit into that.
What are they currently paying Camas?
So it's 5.4 million, but that includes the EMS levy.
Okay.
And it's going to drop to 5.2 million in the year after that. And their EMS levy is, I want to say it's about 1.6, 1.8 million. So that roughly is about 3.4-ish million in there for fire service. That would be if they continue with the ILA for EMS oversight and for transport with Camas. Okay. So I looked specifically, and Pam looked specifically at fire service delivery. And this is only personnel. This is not apparatus. This is not stations. There's nothing else. And there's no equipment. Because talking with the elected officials, they don't know exactly what the divorce leaves for everybody. So I would assume that Washougal is going to have their own fire station back. But as far as apparatus, as far as equipment, all of those things, those are sort of unknowns right now. So it could be that they get enough apparatus and they've got enough equipment, and so there's not additional costs besides maintenance and the usual costs that are associated, or they have to go out and buy another fire engine.
Yeah, even if they have enough apparatus stuff to program and cost for a replacement.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, with what we've talked about in the past, is if we had an ILA for a year or 2 years with the idea of annexation, then that becomes an easier discussion, because those engines would just become part of our fleet. We wouldn't need the extra engines that they would need if they stood up their own fire department.
Yeah.
Because we need backup fire apparatus, they would need backup fire apparatus. If we're one entity, we would only need one, essentially, backup fire engine in case one of them goes down. The odds of two of them going down at the same time are relatively low.
So this is, for them, this is staffing 43 only.
Well, yes and no. With the ILA with us, it's however we want to staff. Whatever our idea of the response is. Now, obviously, they'll want some guarantees involved in that. Standing up their own fire department, yeah, it would be for 43 staff. It would be 43. So in theory, to get a certain amount of people on an apparatus, you need more than that because of vacation, sick time, mm-hmm. holiday, Calibus, everything that's yeah. built in there. So when you see a number of, say, 12 firefighters, which would be 4 per shift, really you're probably going to have 3 per shift, a percentage of the time in there. So we went with 12 firefighters and 15 firefighters in both of the scenarios. Again, that is not necessarily what I recommend. They ran 2,089 calls last year. We ran 1,054 calls last year. So they've doubled, basically, the amount of calls that we have. So to provide full service, realistically, 18 would probably be a recommendation for the numbers. But again, it wouldn't. That would just be a non-starter in our conversation. So I didn't think to put that down.
So when we're talking to them, that's going to be something important.
Absolutely.
To tell them, like.
Yeah.
And interesting, Chief, this does not include overtime.
Correct. So the stand-up model of Washougal with 12 firefighters is probably going to incur the most overtime. The model of 15 firefighters with an ILA with East County and Fire Rescue probably has the least amount of overtime implications. So even though those numbers are, you know, 100, what are they, 12 with, so yeah, you know, $100,000 or so apart, the 12 people with Washougal in a stand-up alone fire department will probably surpass what the ILA with us mm-hmm. with 15 firefighters would be.
And the titles are lieutenant now at this point because we had anticipated doing that in the future.
Yeah, yes. For us, and I included it for them because they don't have any officers, right. So they will absolutely need that.
Yes.
Now, and again, I think I explained it a little bit where I put lieutenants in. They might decide to go with 3 captains, which of course would be an increase in cost in that as well. Currently, we have 3 captains, so adding a layer of lieutenants is just what we were about to do, or what we're going to do in 2027.
So if we did the ILA with them, kind of using this preferred, either option really, I guess, but the preferred option, so each shift would have a captain and 2 lieutenants?
Captain and 1 lieutenant.
A captain and 1 lieutenant? Yep. Okay. Yep. And that's assuming we don't go to having a lieutenant at 94 or something like this. Because we left that option open in our last labor agreement, right? Like, we sort of designed the lieutenant process, which would turn the bottom 2 ranks steps of captain into 2 steps of lieutenant. And then the top 2 steps would be 2 steps of captain. So we could have 1 captain, 1 lieutenant per shift, or we could end up with 1 captain and 2 lieutenants per shift.
So just to hit kind of a minimum dollar amount mm-hmm. here,
yeah.
for an ILA with us, we continue with our 3 captains and add yeah. a layer of lieutenants, okay. which again, we were going to. So yes, we would have 2 lieutenants. The idea with us adding lieutenants is that if the captain's off, there's still an officer in charge. Mm-hmm. There's still going to be times possibly where they're both gone and someone has to act.
Okay.
The capacity of.
Yeah.
Adding this, yes, there would be 2 lieutenants.
Okay.
But it would be up to the captain and us, obviously, how we would staff, how we would deploy that.
Okay.
The odds are the lieutenant probably would respond out of 43, and we probably, if another lieutenant or the captain was up, maybe we don't send an officer to 94s.
Okay.
Maybe we staff a squad that day, something along those lines.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to make sure I'm understanding this because mm-hmm. sometimes I look at this and I get cross-eyed.
I tried to make it as big so I could read
you
it as well.
Yeah. That's not an issue. I just want to make sure I'm understanding the labeling and what it
yep.
actually refers to. So the interlocal with ECFR, that's Washougal and us having an interlocal.
Correct.
And that's what those numbers are. The stand-up Washougal Fire Department is their department alone without us involved. Is
sure.
that correct? I want to make sure. Okay.
Yes. The one thing that we've maintained, we've discussed and I've maintained with them is that I will assist them in whatever capacity they need as they stand up their fire department.
Got it. Okay.
If they stand up their own fire, once they get to that level, they should be hiring their own chief. I don't think it's in the best interest of us to split me working for them and working for here and having two separate fire departments. It's either we go for a contract for a little bit and then we become one happy family, or they go on their
do their own way, and then we've got two departments in a district in this area.
Right.
Mm. Yeah. So those costs, are their costs or our costs or combined costs?
They are based on our costs.
Our costs.
Yes.
Okay.
Again, because there's no Washougal Fire Department, it all became one. We don't necessarily know what they're going to have for costs.
For a labor, labor contract.
Correct.
We just structure, yeah.
Yeah, we just went by our contract. We went to the highest step and added in as much as what we could to try to give them sort of the, I guess, the worst case scenario.
Cost-wise,
the cost
yeah.
would be.
So this is assuming all the lieutenants and firefighters are EMTs, not paramedics.
So that's a very good point.
And it's also assuming that all these firefighters are being paid. So we're talking step two lieutenant and step
Step one lieutenant.
It's golf. One is better. So more skilled, right. More experienced.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so it's like lieutenant one, firefighter one.
Correct.
So this is the highest possible costs. So in all likelihood, we're going to have firefighters at step four and three.
Correct.
As it's hiring up younger, less experienced firefighters.
Yeah, we figured it'd be better to go over than to go under.
I agreed. Yeah, I just want to make sure I understand. So worst case cost scenario.
Yeah.
Best case experience scenario.
Right.
But assuming EMTs and not ALS, not paramedics.
Yeah. So and because we don't have that, we didn't factor that in at all.
Right.
In most contracts, when you receive your paramedic, if you're an ALS agency, that's a 10% increase at minimum. There's a lot of agencies now that are paying 12 or 13% for that increase. So if you base it off 10%, you can take a look there. You can it's fairly simple math to figure out what their increase would
right.
be. But we just didn't include that because it's not in our normal operations. There are a couple other interesting points here. Admin-wise, because we already have two admin people that do similar duties, we probably wouldn't need as many extra. We would still need extra. We would still need an extra admin person, but they would probably need a couple of extra admin people to do accounting for them. Now, in our conversations, they had made mention that they might be able to use one of the current city staff that does some of this for some of the other departments, but that's up to them to figure out how they would want to do that. This also doesn't account for duty coverage for command roles. So right now, we're now at three chiefs, so we probably have duty coverage, and I'm just going to throw a number out, but probably 95% of the time now. They have none with the stand-up of their own fire department until they get their fire chief in. And then at that point, it should be up to the fire chief to decide how they're going to go about providing that duty coverage. One of the things that I had mentioned when we had talked about me taking over this position is that we have the latitude not to fill a duty chief position. But if a call happens, we're relying on our neighbors to fulfill that for us. And so I wanted to put a little bit more emphasis on making sure that we did have somebody in the duty officer role. And they understand, you know, the constraints we're under, but, you know.
Well, in this scenario, Washougal would have a fire department, and Camas would be probably having to be more compact and have less people
you
and less
think,
officers.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So relying on, there's no Camas Washougal Fire Department.
Correct.
To provide that coverage, and relying on Camas to be able to do it is putting too much on them when they're probably dealing with a lot of stress and challenges in their size downsizing.
That's very true. The other part of this is
there's a but there.
Yeah.
There's mutual aid agreements.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily whether they choose to cover them, they would cover them, and so would we, because we have the same mutual aid agreements. So that's when it probably relies on the board to stress that our department is being taxed, or CAMAS mm-hmm. would need to do the same in saying that their department is being taxed with time and, you know, running in and taking over calls for them, that they need to put some sort of duty coverage in place.
So in the ILA scenario, either preferred or minimum, it would be a second deputy chief. Is that what we're saying here? 12 line, so in the minimum staffing, 12 line positions, one deputy chief, one admin, one fire marshal. So got out a fire marshal either way.
Yes.
Got out a deputy.
Yes.
Either way, so we'd have two deputies.
Yes.
And then 12 line positions and one more admin person for a total of three. And then if they are doing it, then the additional cost is a second admin person, mm-hmm. possibly, depending on what they want to do with their city government and their own fire
and
chief.
Their own fire chief, yeah.
And that's where a lot of the extra cost is coming.
Right, and again, you know, if you just compare numbers to numbers, we would have four chiefs, two deputies, Assistant Chief Jacobs and myself, to be able to handle duty coverage. They would have a fire chief and a deputy chief. They would have two. Mm-hmm. So they could provide some overhead and some rotational coverage, but we would probably still need to go in. And
we would still be filling that. There would still be a gap we'd end up filling.
Right.
Okay. Why do you ask that question? Because I didn't understand that there was a second deputy chief that we'd have to hire.
Right.
Because we're expanding at this point and taking on more.
So I
can't do all that yourself.
So my vision for that.
I hope I'm your favorite.
So far.
Out of you?
Senior deputy chief.
My vision for a second deputy chief is myself, Deputy Chief Brown, and the other deputy chief would all work in the battalion chief position of an ABC shift. So for 24 hours on a Monday, Deputy Chief Brown is the responder. Next day is the next, and
Deputy Chief Green. So like each command officer would be assigned to a shift.
Athena, who'd you bring?
The man of leisure.
What are you up to?
I just stopped by to say
hi. Oh, nice. Excellent.
Now we have that possible third.
There's our third deputy.
Third deputy, right? Yeah. Yeah. Very hungry. What happens when you walk in the room, you get volunteered.
Yeah, he'll do it. He'll do it.
Yeah.
She ran underneath that?
She's saying, she's over here.
Checking everybody
she's
out.
She's over here to say hi.
Right. Yeah.
Excellent.
Now I was taking Danny for a walk down around the lake, and I said, maybe just stop and see who's working, and I needed to say hi to you.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Have you met before?
No.
No?
So
we're talking.
Good.
Crunching the numbers on adopting Washougal.
Okay.
Anything
I do now, just let me know.
Absolutely.
I'm going to slide out the back door.
Pam's going to get a hold of you about something in the budget. She just wants to make sure that she's not going to change any of the formulas by, I think, adding or taking away one of the things. But
hey,
my shopping bag. That's all right. It won't hurt any.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll be headed to the island tomorrow, but I'll be available by phone and email. And
she's off till Tuesday, so.
Yeah,
okay.
I'll still be in the island. I get yard work to do.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, I'll get out of your way.
All right, you're good. Good to see you.
Thanks for dropping by.
Want to go for a walk?
Yeah.
Is she perfect?
Let's go.
She's ready.
Nice meeting you.
You too.
Bye, Athena.
Bye, Athena.
Pretty girl.
Have fun.
Bye, Mike.
Happy 4th.
Who's got his mic off?
Bye, Brendan.
Brendan and Mike, you missed a visit from Athena and some human she brought along.
Pick up at the lake.
Her driver.
But essentially, just getting back to the rotation, essentially we would have the same system that Camas has in place and Vancouver has in place for their shift coverages.
Yeah. So they would do it with like a battalion chief and we'd be doing it with a couple deputies.
So right now the way that we're designed is we are battalion chiefs when we respond to calls. So today, if one of us goes out, it's not, you know, Chief Black or Chief Brown, it's battalion, it's BC-91. One of us just fills that role. Now, it gets complicated if we both go, because then we have to use our particular personal designators, and that's a little bit different, and that's what we're going to be doing tomorrow. And I contacted our dispatch so that
What's going on tomorrow?
Right. But that's why I contacted them to make sure that they understood what all of those numbers meant. Because they're not normally used. They're in the CAD. They're just not normally used. So it can cause a little confusion.
Okay. So rather than using why would, if there was an ILA, why would we need another deputy chief rather than having, like, a battalion chief type position?
Again, you know, with the expansion
of
the amount of people and the level of work that's involved, I mean, we could certainly take a look at that.
Yeah.
Again, I wanted to put it...
No, I mean, I trust you on it. I'm just curious.
I'd put it at a higher dollar amount.
Yeah.
So kind of fitting into that worst case scenario, this is going to be the top dollar.
Yeah.
And we can certainly look at changing roles. But Chief Brown, essentially, if a bus hits me, is taking over.
Mm-hmm.
And it would probably be best if we had the depth in our organization that somebody can take over for him.
No buses.
Okay. And you're saying you think it would be better to have 18 line positions, but you think that's going to be a non-starter budget-wise?
I believe so.
Okay.
It will be something when we discuss this. It will be something that I bring up. It was planned, so when Chief Harton got together with Chief Free and they did this 2 or 3 years ago, I got those spreadsheets and there was another scenario with 18 people in there. Mm-hmm. But that the spreadsheets went very, very deep. They went into ALS, not ALS, and a bunch of other variables in there. And I wanted to make it sort of as simple as possible just to take a look at and just take a look at there's this much money available and already this is what it's going to cost you just for the people.
Yeah, assuming they get functional apparatus and equipment from the division, there would still need to be an additional, what, 300, 400,000 a year programmed for equipment and apparatus maintenance and repair?
Possibly more. Possibly more. You know, we haven't talked about, you know, the station, utilities, gas, overtime. It goes deep.
Yeah, okay.
This is just people. So a good number to have eventually is what is a maximum levy rate. We'll just go there for the entire district. If we had $1.50 across the board, what would be our budget to work from?
Right.
Yeah.
So I know, and we did talk about it at the meeting. I forget his name, the financial manager. Daniel was going to look at that as well. They mentioned that they had support from the voters to go to $1.05. So that's sort of where they were comfortable with, and we didn't discuss going to the maximum levy rate.
Well, and then, you know, depending on what happens with property values, it might, you know, and if property values only rise, they rose pretty slowly this last year, and so if they rise at a smaller, at a low rate, or they don't rise at all, then we're, and you know, we did an annexation in 2 or 3 years, then it's $1.40 something is what it looks like. And so, you know, if they got, it sounds like they feel like they've got support at $1.05, but you know, an annexation is just whatever our rate is, that's your rate now.
Yep.
Right. And so if you know, kind of the slowing in property values holds as a trend, or if they decline or just right. hold steady, then we're talking like annexation of $1.40 something, and that, you know, yeah. is that going to happen?
The one advantage that Meshugal has is new construction.
Yeah.
And so that might add to the overall amount that they've got, where we don't have, you know, an overabundance of that. Yeah.
yeah.
And businesses, things like that.
Right, yeah. And the fire marshal, realistically, is mostly for them because of the new construction mm-hmm. and because they're a city, so there's certain, you know, building requirements that they're going to have. Right now, our stuff gets approved through the county fire marshal,
right.
so we don't need to employ one necessarily.
Yeah. Commissioner Taggart, you're off mute. Did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember my chain of thought here. First of all, I like the idea of having sort of maximum numbers for people here. I when I first saw it, I assumed that's what it was, and it's like, yeah, you can do lower numbers, but it's best to look at worst case, I think, for all of this stuff. So that's really well done, Chief.
Good.
But there was something else. Oh, it was when David Scott, when we met with him, he was talking about that $1.04 per thousand, and that there's the bigger the city, the smaller the per person, the smaller amount of money you need per property is kind of what he was saying. And I kind of did the German Shepherd head tilt. I wasn't sure if that was really true or not. The fire departments I've worked with are all about the size we are, so I don't know if that's really true. I mean, is a big city like Los Angeles or something is 40 cents cover a fire department? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
So as far as Martha's question about, you know, revenue projections and, you know, Josh talking about it, the revenue, the potential tax revenue at $1.50 or whatever, I think we may need to look at the combined, like Martha suggested, look at the combined income from that fire district that includes Washougal and kind of know what the real number is. I mean, if David's correct and you need a smaller number for a larger thing, we should do pretty well. I mean, we may not need the whole $1.50. So, I just don't know enough to know what the real number is.
So I think the thing that Josh brought up too is that whatever, if we do an annexation, whatever the rate we are at that time is the rate that the city of Washougal also will be at, regardless.
Okay. Josh, what was? I don't remember.
Well, so we're not voting on the levy rate when we're voting on an annexation. It's just ECFR has its levy rate at that time, and so what ECFR's citizens are voting on and what Washougal citizens are voting on is whether or not to have Washougal annexed into East County. So a levy rate vote would have to be a separate vote. So if property taxes if the rate's not changing much or is declining slowly because the assessed value is increasing more slowly than we kind of saw in the previous, 2018 to 2024 period was very rapid growth in assessed value, but the 2024 to 2025 change was pretty small. A slight increase in assessed value, but not a lot. So we had a pretty small decline in the levy rate. So what I'm saying is if that pattern holds, they're going to be paying a higher levy rate than if we go back to rapid growth in assessed value.
Okay.
But Washougal won't really have a say on that if we go to annexation. They'll just have a say on whether they want to join the district, and they'll be paying whatever the current rate is.
Yeah, I think what he was when I had the meeting with him as well, we went over this a little bit, is that it might not require the lid lift and some other things because of the pool of money now, and as things start to drop, that's okay because they're starting to level off with the increase that they're going to experience during annexation. So if you know, our levy drops to a 150, 140, 135, that might still be perfect.
That still might be sufficient.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because of the economies of scale.
Right.
Yeah.
And Commissioner, this is Sammy Brown. I just know that the ratio to resources to population pretty much stays the same. So when the population goes up, the revenue goes up, but the number of resources also goes up equally. Having worked for a city, it was 200,000 people. Our property taxes were about the same they are here because you had to have 225 career firefighters. So it all kind of stays the same.
That's what I would think, and so that's why, again, for the German Shepherd head tilt.
Yeah. It may be wishful thinking on David's part. Yeah,
and that's it may be, Josh, and that's kind of what I'm worried about. I just want to make sure, you know, he's not making some assumptions that aren't true. We need to make sure that we're all on the same page as far as revenue and, you know, cost to provide services per property.
Yeah, and that's where the numbers, that's where the numbers come in.
Yeah, like, the other thing that I would suggest too is that if we get closer to a partnership, that we hire an accountant, hire someone to go through all the numbers on both sides, so it's not an employee of us or an employee of Washougal that's reviewing all of this, and make sure that we didn't miss something in the calculations on either side.
That's an excellent suggestion.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, there's a lot of steps in putting to. I remember the ILA process that they put together for Camas and Washougal, and that was Chief Swinhart that went through that process. And he, the last meeting when they finally voted for him, he was sweating.
I was going to ask, did he retire right after?
No, he didn't. He worked so hard to get him to go. And then, a few years later, although he got really sick and almost died. So I guess maybe that might have done some stress on his body.
That's true.
I don't know. It was a weird time. But it was a long process, and they worked really hard on it. But that was two cities. That's a different thing.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to be quite that. Since it's already been done one time, I don't think it'd be quite that bad. And then getting prepped like this is really good.
Yeah.
And who knows? They're looking at to run RFA again, possibly in November.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so right now, like, what their fire levy is not enough. They're having to use other city funding sources to do it, and it's been pretty clear from the meetings with Washougal that is causing a lot of stress on their other public services that they're supposed to be providing, and they really do want to, like, their preference is to shed, you know, have fire service covered itself and through its own levy, and hopefully not be something that they have to handle. I don't know. I mean, so this is really good to have these numbers, and I'd really like to see, and like you said, I probably can't get a good estimate without knowing what equipment and apparatus they would end up with, but I'd really like to see what's the additional number for building maintenance and apparatus and equipment maintenance, and to program replacement of apparatus and equipment, so it's continuing to do what we're doing now, which is saving as we go, so that we're not having to go into debt when we get those big ticket items come up.
A couple things, I think. The first thing is, you know, we were all in that meeting when they said about getting out of the fire business, and I think they walked that back a little bit because they started thinking about the political ramifications of that and how they were going to try to explain that. So I think they want to package this as a good deal for their citizens. And then the other thing with that is, if this doesn't resonate with them, then I feel like that's probably the end of things.
Yeah.
And so this might sound a little terse, but I want them to do some work on this as well and come back with to us after they read this and then say, okay, yeah, what's the next steps here with equipment and maintenance of that? And then we'll put some energy and some effort towards that. But until that point, you know, we've put some numbers in front of them so they can digest those and see what their response is.
Good idea. Yeah. Yes, I really agree. This has to be if it's truly a partnership, there needs to be a who's paying for what,
right.
And
right.
It needs to be really balanced.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the first question when I talk about this, because I tell people, well, this is a possibility. First of all, I think, didn't it already happen? I know, I love that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, who do you think we are? Do you know?
Yeah, it's back to using the, you know, doing CPR classes and stuff so people know who right. their fire and rescue service is provided by.
True. Yes.
Yeah, because I had to explain that a lot. And, you know, I did have some people that I know that live in town in Washougal were like, so does this RFA mean that East County takes over?
No. I'm confused for them. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, and that's I also get asked the question, okay, so clarifying, you're saying, okay, so you're not part of this, but you could be in the future. Is that a good thing for me as an ECFR citizen? Is that not a good thing? And, of course, we don't have the answers to those questions yet. We
yeah.
didn't have
those.
Right.
Depends on how it's structured.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Brendan, Mike, any questions or thoughts on this discussion?
Nothing additional that hasn't been brought up. I agree with the different points you guys have been discussing. I mean, it's more flattery than constructive. I was just going to thank Chief Black for the points he's been thinking through this whole process. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate it. Kind of breakdown of the points he keeps bringing up. But what he just did there, you know, about Washougal's buy-in, the part about having a third party review it. So just applauding you on the work and the way you're approaching this.
Pam as well. Pam's put in a tremendous amount of work into this.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
But thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah, I know the other thing that we're not discussing right now, but ties as part of Washougal, you know, like you said, they kind of walk back on the not wanting to be involved in the fire business, but they want to be able to have it sell. The other part I'll be curious in the conversation is what part of kind of representation and decision making. I know that there was some conversation about that earlier, so I'll be curious as well what's going to work for them in that negotiation.
Yeah, it what will work for them and what will be a non-starter for us. We've discussed this, and the Board of Commissioners is in charge of this. So it's a partnership to begin with the goal of annexation. I've recommended that I don't want to continue a contract year after year after year after year with them, because it just causes problems throughout our response. We're two separate fire departments, two separate contracts. It's additional work for us to remember each of those, negotiate at different times. It doesn't seem to make sense. So ultimately, the goal would be that the representation would be the Board of Commissioners after annexation. I can understand that they would want some governance in this to begin with to set it up properly. But at the end of this, if we come to that agreement, they would be out of the fire business and we would take over their fire service delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. And that conversation too, you know, understanding that politics is optics as well.
Right,
so
right.
And where the, you know, involvement, you know, somebody that's in attendance versus somebody that's voting, like what that type of, like, body's going to look like there, you know, what flexibilities they have. Because I think from what you've expressed, you and I are on the same page with those feelings and kind of sentiments of where we'd like it to go. So I'm just eager to see what they come back with as well.
Great, yeah, absolutely. And David mentioned that, you know, he's going to have to educate the council on this. You know, a lot of people will come back and say, well, we just went through an ILA with one department. Are we just swapping one department for another department? And one of the criticisms is we didn't have a lot of say in how that department ran.
Yeah.
They can have some say with you and an agreement of how it comes together. But, it, you know, ultimately, then again, it's all East County Fire and Rescue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's by law, and that's important for them to understand.
Right.
It's a different animal, the annexation.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a big trust piece,
yes,
there,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Although not as much as with cameras,
yeah.
I say. I think it.
Yeah, it's not, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of trust there.
Yeah.
So has Dave Scott or others at Marshallville City Government talked about wanting to get a Camas City Council ECFR Commission joint meeting going, or are they still trying to figure out the taking another swing at the RFA?
Yeah,
is that still their focus?
I haven't heard back since I emailed this.
Okay.
And Dave was going on, I think, a month vacation. So I think that's why he was really eager to get the conversations going, because he knew he was going to be a month behind.
Yeah.
So I haven't heard anything. I emailed this week and a half, 2 weeks. No, actually, it was before I left. So it was probably 2 weeks ago now that I emailed that to him. So, yeah, no other conversation.
Okay.
So Washougal may want to know that the Post Record has them committed to the continuing with the RFA.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I don't know if that's because they said so or that was just the
assumption.
Yeah. Because there's a story. There's a couple stories, actually, about them wanting to move forward. And then the union is the biggest promoter at this point, which, although they want changes. And there's a group of people that were against it in the first round, who also want changes before they'll be satisfied. And I guess Camas was working with them on that. Had to do with the wording of the dollars and cents that were being held back and it was very complicated.
Yes.
And I think it was an issue for people to even understand what that was.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But yeah, they said a thing. The story said something. It was just like one sentence, and Washougal's on board with this too, or something like that. It was that simple. So I don't know if that's true. We just got put the paper that way.
Yeah, I don't know. It seemed like from our last meeting with Mayor Stebe and Dave Scott that Washougal was more like, yeah, we'll give it another shot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know if they've formally voted on it.
Right.
Okay. Anything else on this? Okay.
Good information.
What was the second topic we had on today?
We were going to review the Volunteer Academy.
That's right. Thank you. That was my suggestion. I was like, I feel like an idiot because I know I suggested. I suggested
that was
this
your
one.
Idea.
It was my idea, and I can't remember it.
No problem.
So for that discussion, I'm going to turn it over to Chief Brown. The volunteers are going to fall under his purview.
Under his purview.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, so Chris Miller and Chief Black and I met a few days ago,
mm-hmm.
to discuss the Fire Academy, how it went, and there were some lessons learned. It was the first time, and so some good lessons learned, but overall, there were three people who, one person was pretty rough in all the testing process and definitely needs some work, and two folks were close but didn't pass everything, and everybody else passed. And
out of how many?
We have 15 total.
Okay.
And three people didn't test yet.
Yeah.
Okay. So we had 12 that went through the test.
So 12 passed.
No.
No. Okay.
Nine
passed.
Nine
everything.
Passed. Three were a little rough.
Two were a little rough.
And
one was
really rough.
Was not gonna. Wasn't making the cut.
Yeah. We'll see what happens with that person going moving forward. Yeah.
Okay. And then three still need to be tested.
Yep.
Okay.
And there's a group of those nine now who are going to their doctors to get a doctor's release to do the job, and then they'll undergo a drug screening, and then we want to get them online as a group, so it's not just one person straggling in. It'll make it more consistent, and the crews will know, have a better understanding of who's qualified to do what. But before that happens, we want to put together kind of a platform, an outline of how this whole program is going to work. And so I started working with that. I got a little PowerPoint to show you.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I can get it to work. Can you all see that online? Okay, wow.
Yes.
First time.
Good job.
So as I said, this is a real rough draft. Chris Miller and I are going to meet tomorrow at Station 94 to try to hash out some of the specifics, and then I'll meet with Captain Sorensen, who's going to be in charge of the training, because a lot of this has to do with training. And then we'll bring it to the chief and for his review and his input, and then hopefully we can get that done before those folks finish their drug screen, so we'll have an agreed upon outline for the program.
Can I jump in real quick?
Yeah.
So the board wasn't aware, so I made a change with responsibilities and duties, and Captain Sorensen was our facilities person.
Right, yeah.
And Captain Birch was our training captain, and I've swapped their two areas of responsibility.
Okay.
And they're
so,
okay with that, right?
They're both okay with it. Hopefully they're excited about the opportunities that both those areas present to them. Danny's been here a long, long time, and so maybe shaking things up, you know, might appeal to him. And Captain Sorensen being younger and newer in the fire service, I think he's got a real zeal for wanting to get his hands in. So
yeah.
Excellent.
Good. Yeah, so Captain Sorensen was taking care of that facility stuff that we talked about a couple days ago at our mm-hmm. regular board meeting. Mm-hmm. So when that's brought back around while I'm in Spain, that's going to be Captain Birch that
there's
doing
gonna
that?
Be a
or,
transition
is it just, or are we still kind of in the transition?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So they're going to meet on the 10th
okay.
and discuss what they need to do to make this happen, what areas of the budget that you know they're responsible for, what programs they have up and running yeah. now. And it's not going to be just a flip of a switch, right?
Right.
They'll help each other out. And we have some additional depth now with Chief Brown, so I thought that this was a good opportunity to explore
okay.
that.
Okay.
Yep.
Excellent. All right. So the expectations, we wanted to lay it out. I think everyone's kind of been through these before, but we just wanted to make sure there was no misunderstanding. The communications were as clear as possible, so the firefighters should expect to have a community impact and work on their skill development, receive qualified leadership, have regular evaluations to go over their accomplishments and where they stand. There is the final financial compensation, the stipend in accordance with our policy, the Board of Volunteer Firefighter membership, which per their policy and certain qualifications, they could receive disability benefits and a pension, and then finally references. They have an opportunity to build a reputation for themselves as qualified, skilled firefighters and receive good references for what they want to do in the future. And then the district's expectations of them are obviously to respond to emergencies and operate as a team to mitigate those emergencies, maintain their composure under pressure, physical fitness, and emotional resiliency, which we can obviously mentor and help with all those things. Maintenance of the equipment and apparatus and stations. They have to meet the training requirements and the response requirements, which are spelled out a little more in depth here. And this is where we need to get some specifics agreed upon. I'm really looking forward to getting Chris Miller's input and Captain Sorensen's input so we can see what's best for the district as far as these specifics. Mm-hmm. But it'll include a combination of regularly scheduled drills, not so much like a traditional volunteer program where the volunteers are responding from their homes and they have a drill night, but because these folks are gonna be working shifts with the crews, mm-hmm. we can incorporate a lot of that training while they're doing the shifts. So it'd be more mm-hmm. like, less traditional and kind of more of a progressive look at it. So so it would combine those regularly scheduled drills, and we're not sure how that would look yet, and the completion of their comprehensive task book and training on shift. So we're not sure about the dates, times, and locations of the drills, how many we'll have, but we'll get those cleared up over the next few days. But they have to complete a minimum hours of annual training. The Board of Volunteer Firefighters, in order to qualify for their pension, you have to have 20 hours of annual training, which will exceed that, no problem. And then they'd be on probation for 12 months with the completion of their task book. So if it took a little bit longer, we could extend that probation to get that task book completed. And that task book will be full of a lot of applicable training, and you're just making sure if they show proficiency and skill at that particular task, they get checked off by
a career firefighter here, and there's a whole booklet of stuff that they can work throughout the year for. And then performance, they'll meet their response requirements as opposed to responding to calls and by working here on shifts, and they can have 8, 12, or 24-hour blocks. We'll be scheduling all that with them. And then they'll perform their assigned tasks as a member of a team. And during their downtime, they can work on the routine duties of a firefighter, on their task books, and participate in the company training that shift. And then they'll receive regular evaluations to recognize their growth and accomplishments, as well as areas for improvement. And I think it should really generate some productive volunteers who are really going to be part of the team and bond with the staff.
So
and
too, yeah.
Have a positive impact. And then, speaking of connections and bonding, so by way of shared experiences, they'll build the connections, and then, you know, as they prove themselves, and they'll earn the respect and the admiration of the coworkers, the career staff here, and that'll only be beneficial for their future. Mm-hmm. So we're not looking for the traditional volunteer who's going to be here for decades, but who at times can get a lot less productive. It becomes more of a social club. We're looking for students at the colleges, folks that want to get involved, want to make their career firefighting, and this mm-hmm. is where they can earn that experience and training. So and there are fewer and fewer places to do that nowadays. And we were talking, and I remember when I was trying to get on down originally in California, and I wound up testing throughout the entire West Coast, and Thurston County Community College, or South Puget Sound Community College, had a good program, but there weren't many. So, yeah.
I really appreciate the structure of this, and the fact that you just mentioned that this isn't about a social club, it's a cultural shift. This is a professional expectation of professionalism. So that, to me, makes a lot more sense and a lot more investment in PCR that way.
Yeah. And I think it will prove a better outcome.
Yes.
So
yes.
We'll get more effective production.
Absolutely.
I think like the odd term, but the life expectancy of a volunteer is really only 3 or 4 years anymore. And most of our folks in the academy group that we brought on, one person said they were probably just wanting to be a volunteer, not looking for a career job. So 14 other people said, I want a career in the fire service.
Yeah.
So we will gladly show them how to do that, but there's a cost to that. And that cost is you're going to come in and you're going to run calls for us.
Right.
So,
yeah. And do we have an expectation on how long, once they're through everything and they're a firefighter, how long they're going to be running calls for us as a volunteer before they go elsewhere? Is there any kind of an expectation?
No, not necessarily. Some people will get picked up right after the academy's done.
Yeah.
There was big hiring going on in Vancouver. Portland and Vancouver did lateral hirings, and they've never in the history of their departments have done lateral hirings before. So the days when, you know, 2,000 people would show up for, you know, a few jobs are gone. For whatever reason, the fire service has lost some of its luster. So some of our folks will get picked up pretty quickly. Actually, there's one person in our academy who had a chief's interview a couple of weeks ago. So they may end up getting a job offer before they even run a call for us. It's just the cost of doing business.
Yeah.
It does seem to be cyclical. You may get back to those 2,000 people showing up for a job. If we get another Backdraft movie.
It normally takes 2 or 3 years before someone finds their first career job. And a lot of these folks are younger, so they can afford to volunteer, live at home, you know, go to school, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Once they get a little bit older, they get into relationships, they want cars, houses, babies, that kind of thing. They stop volunteering and, you know, either get into the fire service or start doing something else.
And this is a great, one of the advantages for the volunteers is
they get a day in the life of a firefighter to learn, is this even for them?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, so. Absolutely.
So yeah, we'll have more over the coming weeks and days. Like I said, meeting with Chris Miller tomorrow and Captain Sorensen, and then we'll put it all together, all the specifics, and get your approval and off we go.
So as far as lessons learned, what are things we could have done differently with the academy?
No, I'll jump in with that. So one of the ideas that I had when I first got here and started talking with the volunteers, and then we've talked about this, as they sort of came on, you know, over the course of a year, whenever they wanted, and there wasn't really a pathway for them. And so I wanted an academy for volunteers, but I didn't want to be the one to say I want an academy. So I went and talked to all the career folks and the volunteers, and I let them tell me that they wanted an academy. I was like, okay, good. That's what I want to do anyway.
Laying out the breadcrumbs and hoping to, and hoping exactly. They'll bite. Yeah.
Exactly. And then I have a sensitivity to being a former training chief. And I didn't want to come in here and be the training chief for the department and step on people's toes. And they were probably already nervous about a former training chief coming in and wanting to do things. So I wanted to allow them the voice to be able to build the academy. And I had a few suggestions here and there. I think one of the things that we learned is that we need to be a little bit less laid back and a little bit more structured when it comes to how the academy is put together. We struggled sometimes to find enough instructors to be in there, so a couple people picked up the slack, which was great. But I hope that more people get caught up in the enthusiasm of this and want to start to train more.
Yeah.
And we paid them overtime for the instructors to be here, so hopefully, you know, if they're looking for a little bit of bump as well,
yeah,
you can hear that. So I think you're going to see a little bit more structure, and I think you're going to see maybe a little bit longer of an academy as well, maybe an extra weekend or two
okay.
to cover all the skills that we want to cover. When we have, when we did the reflection on the person that didn't do very well and the people that maybe didn't pass a couple, I think it's important to look at us. Did we give them the proper instruction before we look at them as not being able to make it in the fire service? And maybe it's somewhere in between there.
Yeah.
So,
Okay.
Excellent. Like we're getting to be big people now. That's nice. Yes.
Well, yeah, it's good. I think, you know, over the years, there's been a disconnect between the career and, mm-hmm. and volunteer folks. Captain Crash and Chief Jacobs planning the tender drills that they're trying to do with the tender operators is getting those volunteers and career people together. And there's still some holdover. There's still some skepticism, which I understand from the past, but because they're seeing their colleagues test these folks and saying that person knows what they're doing, then they'll be able to trust them on scene. And if I was the captain on the engine and I had volunteers that were just kind of coming and going, I wouldn't be able to remember, you can cut a car, right? Can you cut a car? You know, and going through everybody and trying to figure that out. They know exactly what everybody is been trained to, and they can expect that from them on scene. They should expect that from them on scene. So, yeah.
Good job.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you.
That's exciting.
Well, I'm hoping that we have 3-person staffing on the engines pretty much all the time.
With the volunteers.
With volunteers.
Yeah.
If you've got an eagle eye in the budget coming up, you might see a student program. Built in there somewhere.
Sure. Working on that. Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I understand there's a cost, but it also means that if we're running a volunteer academy and we have open positions, then we've already got, you know, volunteers that then we've already got a good eye and maybe get the first pick because mm-hmm. we trained them.
Absolutely.
So there's adding depth there. And then I think it might also go better in future years because a lot of our firefighters are very recently hired as in they were hired by Chief Harden, is I think the majority of our firefighters. So as they get more experienced, you know, they'll go from being, well, I'm probationary, or I think I know what I'm doing, as long as I've got, you know, Prash or Birch or Sorensen, you know, or Vera or one of the other folks that have been around longer, to like, you know, keep an eyeball on me to, hey, I can do this and I can do it well enough to teach other people. So I think in future years, some of our firefighters who maybe, you know, didn't feel like they had enough experience or, you know, to be teaching, we'll get there as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. One of the things in the fire service is people get really passionate about certain areas too. You know, they're the extrication person, or they're the wildland person, or whatever. I want to know that we're all operating off of the same cage. And there's a bit of a struggle with that right now, because most of our folks that were hired, they didn't go through a formal academy here. If they get moved around from shift to shift, you know, the expectations or the, well, I guess the expectation of what, how they're going to perform is a little bit different. So we're really going back to the start. And just like you say, is we've got the volunteers going through an academy. They're being taught the East County Fire and Rescue way of doing whatever that particular tasks are. The instructors will only teach to the East County Fire and Rescue way. Pepper in a little bit of their own experience and passion. And then as we hire these folks, if we have open positions, then they're going to be spreading the same way that we do it. And we're going through our policies and SOGs. Those will all reflect that. So now everybody will know exactly what the expectation is in any situation.
All right, good job.
Yeah, thank you.
I wanted to add one thing, that my time starting the Forest Service Volunteers Association, when it's really great when you can get volunteers to the point where they can actually start training in the academies and you know, actually presenting stuff, because it really helps build credibility. I'm sure you guys know this already, but it was a big deal for FSVA. I mean, we were trained very informally by the Forest Service, but we eventually developed training materials ourselves and got buy-in. You know, we'd ask people, you know, the professionals, how do you do this? What kind of procedure do we need? And it because we were asking and putting those materials together and then having the professionals review it, it just gave us a lot of credibility. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think anybody. There's a lot of grumbling at first with volunteers, you know, working and taking, you know, quote, taking positions away from people. But the truth was, there just wasn't any money in the budget for rangers. So if you wanted to have the forest open, you needed people out there. So anyway, to the extent that we can, in our training program at ECFR, if we get to the point where we can have volunteers helping to teach the class and you know, participating as trainers down the road, I think it would be a really, really good thing for us.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And thanks for saying that. That actually kind of prompted something else in my mind, is the term professional. You know, we sometimes use that as a separator between career and volunteer. And I want all our people to be professional. When they get asked what they do, you know, they're a firefighter. Now, they might be a career firefighter or a volunteer firefighter, but they're all professional firefighters.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was probably the wrong word to use.
No. Anything from you, Brendan?
No, just really happy to hear the success of it. It was exciting seeing it come together, and like, you know, just real good luck for our district.
Great.
So big thank you to everybody that's made that possible.
Absolutely, I'll share that for sure.
Please. Yeah, and we got the burn prop done and moved just in time.
That's like one of the best burn boxes I've ever been in.
Is it?
It was real hot. And real smoky in there, yeah. So normally in the burn boxes I've been in, max temp is around 800, and we had over 1,000 degrees in there.
Whoa.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was kind of fun looking through the budget, not this the expenses that we'd paid, not this last meeting, but the second meeting in June, because there's like Two Rivers Farm and Outdoor in there, Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, that's unusual to, not, it's not unusual to see on my budget, but it's unusual to see on the district's expenses, and it's 2 straw bales to set on fire. Yeah. So, so that was kind of fun to see. And then we saw Mia Santander and another volunteer show up as we were looking at the burn box with a trailer, one of the pickups and a trailer load of pallets.
I'm glad
we got that done. It was a little bit controversial among some among at least one commissioner when we bought the plasma cutter and the welding torch, but we've got we fixed our asset, and instead of letting it degrade, and now we have it there for training. Yeah.
And they're building, they have plans to build more props.
Yes, Captain Prash was taking a lot of photographs of the door props at the Boise Fire Training Center. And it was pretty great because you could just practice popping a door all day long without having to rebuild anything. You just use a piece of wood to hold it shut. So that was there, and Captain Sorensen said we'd be looking at a window prop possibly for hauling, practicing hauling heavy people through windows. So that's all really good, and I think that'll probably enhance future volunteer academies as well as our own regular training to have those sorts of props to practice.
Absolutely.
I can see a recruitment flyer with that burn box where it says learn how to stay cool in 1,000 degrees.
For sure. Okay. Anything else from any other commissioners or from either of our chiefs?
I just have one item because I just found out about this. The extension for the 3-day period for the position of commissioner is August 5th through the 7th. Those are the 3 days. So if you want to tell people if they would wish to jump on board and try and get elected, that's when they need to do that.
Through the county
elections office.
Martha, do you still have a sense of your leave as whole? If that's going forward?
As far as I know, I haven't heard otherwise. I sent them the date too. Yeah.
Okay.
I know the lady I was talking with, I think part of her hesitation was she didn't want to run if somebody else who was valuable and interested was doing it, which I tried to argue, like,
People need to choose.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's fun.
Yeah, it is surprisingly fun.
Maybe she needs to go into the bird box.
Yeah.
Go in the bird box.
This is what you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it just occurred to me today that as of about now, I've been a fire commissioner for 7 years, and it's just kind of flown by.
So. Wow.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you, Chief Brown and Chief Black, and thanks, commissioners. If there's nothing else, we'll go ahead and adjourn.
Have a safe 4th, everybody.